All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm speaking to you from New York City on this is the 21st day of 2020. 21st day, I should say, of July 2020. Before I talk more about today's show, I do want to remind you I'm the author of a newsletter called Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks, and you can subscribe to that by going to miningstocks.com. Miningstocks.com, we like to put in a plug for Chen Lin as well, our buddy Chen Lin, who publishes What is Chen Buying, What is Chen Selling. ChenPicks.com is the place to go for that as well. And Michael Oliver, who's not with us today, but I know he's a favorite on this show, it's OliverMSA.com. And we do want to thank all of you for listening, making it one of the more popular shows on the Voice America Business Channel. And we want to encourage you to continue sending along whatever your comments are about this show, positive or negative or whatever. Send them along to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com, questions4@gmail.com. And I also must thank our sponsors, because without them, there would be no show. Our sponsors for today's show, Great Bear Resources, Benchmark Metals, Hannon Metals, Irving Resources, Novo Resources, and Sitka Gold Corp. Well, with the Western monetary system sitting on the edge of the abyss, it certainly is time to own gold and silver. Arguably, you should have been buying it all along, because if you wait too much longer, it may be out of reach for a lot of people. In fact, we're seeing the price of silver up 6.82% today to $21.23 on the bid. So the metals are really starting to move. There is a growing need. Investors are feeling a growing need, and we're hearing that from investors, to own the metals and also the metals shares, which are really taking off as well. Now, last week, after listening to Michael Oliver, I realized that I needed a bit more silver in my portfolio, so I did go out and buy an ETF, just the quick and easy way to get more silver in my portfolio. SLVP trades on the New York Exchange, and it's up 11%. In just a few days. So that gives you an idea that it's time to get moving in the shares and to own them and own the good ones. Because of the growing numbers of people not used to investing in gold, I mean, certainly gold and silver is not what most people are buying in America anyway. And as I noted last week, our son Scott and I are planning to provide a course for investors as soon as we can possibly put it together. It will be an online course that you can access for a fee. Several of you have indicated an interest last week, but we will need to hear from more of you before it makes economic sense for us to work to put this together. But we do want to get moving on it quick because the metals are moving. Today is a great example of a real strong bull market in the precious metals. So if you are interested in a course like that, register your interest by going to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com, questions4taylor@gmail.com. Just let us know. Give us your email. Let us know if you're interested. We'll fill you in with details later. No obligation, of course, but we do need an indication of interest. I've titled today's show Common Sense 2.0. Bob Moriarty returns as my guest for today's show. Common Sense was a pamphlet written by Thomas Paine in 1775, 1776, in that time frame, that fired up members of the original 13 colonies in America to fight for independence from Great Britain. Paine marshaled moral and political arguments to encourage common people in the colonies to fight for an egalitarian government. Well, as a 73-year-old who attended public school, grade school in Dalton, Ohio during the Eisenhower years, I have seen a massive change in our country. Some of it for the better, like the civil rights laws, I would argue, very much needed, but much of it not for the better. We've seen the United States military-industrial complex basically, I think, gain tremendous control of our election process, of our political system. Eisenhower warned us about that back when he was leaving office. And we've seen this, the military-industrial complex make enemies overseas. We have killed untold innocent human beings with our bombs, and we have been involved in constant regime changes, many times regimes that were in perhaps elected by the people. But for one reason or another, we have been involved in endless wars overseas. And, you know, as Ron Paul suggested, not a very popular view for sure, but he suggested back in 9/11, that the reason they came over here was because we were over there. So there's many things that I think are not good about what's happened in America. There are some that are good. Most egregious in my mind is the loss, obviously the erosion of our First Amendment rights, and increasingly it seems a threat to our Second Amendment rights, the right to bear arms. So those two amendments are arguably two of the most important and basic rights granted to every American. The right to speak freely, especially if your views are of a minority nature, it's important that minorities can speak. And the right to bear arms, of course, a very basic American right. And now we know, thanks to Edward Snowden, that our government itself, you know, one of the reasons for the Second Amendment was to protect the citizens against their government. Well, that's almost heresy to say that, but we know from what Edward Snowden told us that, in fact, our government is spying on us. And as a matter of fact, there's plenty of evidence that has come out of recent investigations that President Trump was spied on by the CIA and the FBI. So it seems as though no longer any of us are safe from from our government, our government's ability to spy on us and basically to cause a lot of trouble. This would have certainly made our founding fathers extremely unhappy if they were aware of what was to come in the future. So we do have a lot that needs to be, I think, a lot of things to be concerned about. And so an author, you know, I should just point out that back in 1776, of course, we didn't have our freedom. The people that lived in the colonies were subject to tyranny by King George. And they really wanted to have their freedom. They were looking for freedom. So along comes Thomas Paine, who wrote Common Sense 1.0, that inspired Americans to risk their lives to fight for the God-given rights they believed that we have, that we are supposed to have anyway. Now, someone we don't know who has written Common Sense 2.0 to fit the current threat to our freedom as American citizens from an enemy from within this time. And a friend of mine who understands the intent of our founding fathers and what is required for liberty and justice for all is Bob Moriarty. And when I was talking to Bob a few weeks back, he brought to my attention a booklet titled Common Sense 2.0 because Bob believes this book is so important. He called it to my attention and he asked if he could have the ability to come on the show and talk about it and to review it for us. He has spent time reading it, studying it, and he's going to talk to us about that. So, Bob, I'm really glad that you could join us today. You are a person that has certainly done a lot for your country. At least you thought you were doing a lot of good things for your country as a young man. You flew 832 combat missions in Vietnam. And so it just seems fitting to have someone from your perspective to come on today to talk about Common Sense 2.0. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's always good to hear from you, Bob. And, you know, first of all, I want to note, I believe that you're living in France right now. You're not in the United States. Is that right? And if so, why have you chosen? There's a lot of beautiful places to live in America. Why France?
Well, it's interesting to say that. I literally can't leave because I can't come back. What Trump and the Democrats have done with the COVID has made Americans persona non grata, And you can't come to Europe if you're an American.
Yeah.
So I should be going out on site visits, and I can't do that because as soon as I leave France, I can't come back in the EU. But I've got a place here in the mountains, in the Pyrenees. I do my writing here, and I love it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful environment from what I can see. Yeah, I mean, they really have locked us down, and I know that as in your analysis of mining companies, you do an excellent job, and you go on site very many times and travel long distances to visit places. So you must really be missing that, I guess, huh?
Well, I don't
yes
know.
No.
Okay, that's a really good question. I used to travel 3 weeks a month. It was pretty hard. I learned a lot, but I was gone a lot, and I rather enjoy doing a lot less traveling now. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I mean, Trump and the Republicans and the Democrats have no idea what they've done. They have dropped a neutron bomb on the world economy, and things are going to get much worse.
Yeah, I think that's right, Bob, and I think most people aren't really fully understanding the repercussions of this economic damage that's being done, and of course it's been sort of papered over like many other things. The government prints money and hands it out to people, and there's a price for that that we'll be talking about in the next segment as well, I'm sure. But the anonymous author of Common Sense 2.0 says, and I quote, "We have entered the biggest crisis in American history." And so I'd like to ask you if you agree with that, and if so, why is it the biggest? I mean, we've had some biggies, World War II. I came a couple of years right after that onto this earth. But the Civil War was huge, and the Revolutionary War wasn't a picnic either for those that engaged in it. So do you think this is the biggest of all those that we have coming? Do you think potentially it is the biggest disruptor of all?
I do, absolutely. And I would encourage you to think about the book, The Fourth Turning. This was actually predicted 30 years ago, but we have some absolutely incredible problems that have been ignored. Do you fully understand the concept of entropy?
Yeah, sure. It's decay.
Well, time brings decay.
Right.
If you think about a top, when it slows down, it gets more and more unstable.
Right.
If you think about a bullet leaving the barrel of a gun, its behavior is very predictable as it leaves the gun, but 300 or 400 or 500 meters downrange, it starts becoming more and more unstable.
Mm-hmm.
Entropy says everything gets worse. So if you don't fix a problem as soon as you can, it's going to grow and grow and grow. Now, as an individual or a family or a corporation, if you have financial issues, you obviously do something about it. The government, on the other hand, does exactly the opposite. Their solution to the stock market crash in March, I am absolutely amazed. Nobody predicted that. I think it's Harris in California who's saying that Congress should vote a $2,000 a month giveaway to every family in America monthly, permanently.
Yeah.
And nobody's saying where did the money come from. So what we have, we need to get into the book, what mm-hmm. we have is a broken system. We have the opportunity to fix it, and we need to fix it before it gets worse. There's some really strange, dangerous things going on right now, and there is no such thing as the Democrats are all bad guys, and there is no such thing as the Republicans are bad guys. They're all bad guys. It's one snake, two heads. So let's go into the military-industrial complex.
All right. All right. Bob, we're going to have to do that after a first commercial break. I would just mention that there is a number of things, that being one of them, a military-industrial complex debt and a whole whole host of things that I want to talk to you and have you explain about that's mentioned in the book when we get back after the break. I would mention also that finally in the last segment today, there are some things that can be done to try to overhaul, to try to fix. And I guess we have to look at things that we can do individually, Bob, as well as what we can hope and pray that society will do somehow. And I guess we have to do our part to try to speak the truth as we understand it so that things can get fixed. And we have to be courageous sometimes to do that because, Bob, as much as anybody I know, you say things that require courage, and perhaps it's those 600 or 800 bombing missions that you flew over Vietnam that shows that you have that courage. But anyway, we do have to go to break, and when we come back, I want to get into that military-industrial complex thing and the cost of all of that and all the other related issues. So, folks, we do have to go to break now, but don't go away because we'll be right back with Bob Moriarty.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
Novo Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Pilbara region of Western Australia. Novo has recently partnered with Sumitomo Corporation of Japan to evaluate, advance, and develop the company's Australian gold projects. With over $40 million in cash and $60 million committed from Sumitomo, Novo is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm back here with Bob Moriarty, and we're picking up on this little booklet called Common Sense 2.0, which you can buy at Amazon just for a couple of dollars. It's very cheap. I picked up a copy myself, and I would suggest you do that. You know, I have no idea who the author is, but in reading it, it seems like there's a lot of things in there that are touching on and explaining why we're going through some very difficult times. I think just starting to go through some very difficult times, as Bob just suggested. Well, Bob, when we went to break, you talked about the military-industrial complex. I remember when Eisenhower left the White House, when he left the presidency in his farewell address, he talked about he was fearful of the military-industrial complex. And as one, a general who served and was a key part in World War II, he certainly saw the suffering and the heartache and the sorrow that comes from war, from killing people. The chapter one of Common Sense 2.0 says our military became the enemy. So we're, most Americans believe that, you know, we see these courageous soldiers that go off to war. There are heartbreaking commercials to try to help these soldiers and their families. The men go off and they have their legs blown off or something, or they don't come back at all, and the mother is there with a number of children to take care of. The propaganda, or at least the view, is these are very wonderful people, and I do believe they are. But how could it be that our military has become the enemy, Bob, when in fact everything that we are being told is it's our friend. It's here to save us and protect us and make life better for us.
Well, what happens is we're lied to constantly. And you got to segment when I say the military is the enemy. I'm not talking about the guys who are going off to Syria or going out to Lebanon or going off to Afghanistan. I'm talking about the military-industrial complex. The book is fascinating because it's got stuff I never knew. Eisenhower wasn't the only general who was anti-war. Douglas MacArthur said in 1951, our country is now geared to an arms economy which was bred in an artificially induced psychosis of war hysteria and nurtured upon an incessant propaganda of fear. Now, for the generals to say that, first of all, they understood it, and they were trying to warn us. Now, you are the perfect guy to interview me, okay? I spent 2 years in heavy combat. I was not a non-combatant. I was a volunteer. I was in constant combat for about 20 months. I flew a record number of missions for any Marine in any war in fixed-wing aircraft. I was not a pacifist. I was a warrior. I am still a warrior. I would fight again today, but to defend my country, not to go kill people who have done nothing to us. And that's what we're doing now. So as a practical matter, I don't want to argue against war from a moral point of view. You could take one side. Me, as an 18-year-old, would take the opposite side. But let's look at the practical aspect. The very best reason to be against war is we can't afford it. Every military industrial complex in history, the Romans, the Spanish, the French, the British, the Russians, they collapsed their economies because they spent all the money. Some of the stuff in this book is just absolutely mind-bending. Let me read some stuff to you.
Yeah, sure.
The Navy decided they were going to build these new class of destroyers. The destroyers would fire 155-millimeter projectile up to 60 miles. Now, that is bloody amazing.
Yeah, right? 60 miles.
The 5-inch guns and the 8-inch guns off of destroyers, cruisers, and they had about a 15 or 20 kilometer range. A gun that can fire for 60 miles, that's unbelievable. There is a slight problem. When they did the planning, they guessed the shells would cost $50,000 a piece. Well, because the military-industrial complex, the price went up, and the shells were $800,000 a piece. You pull a trigger, you just spent $1 million. They were going to have 32 of these vessels. They ended up building 3 at a cost of $23 billion. And then they had the USS Gerald Ford, the newest aircraft carrier. They designed the toilet system on that to be similar to the toilet system on an aircraft, but what they didn't understand, and the contractor didn't bother telling them, is you've got to flush the system with acid on a periodic basis. So every couple of months, they're spending $400,000 just flushing the toilet system. The catapult system doesn't work the way it's supposed to. The elevator system for bringing weapons up to the top of the ship so they can load on aircraft, it doesn't function at all. But that is the worst program. The most expensive procurement program in all of world history is the Lockheed Martin F-35. It is a $1.5 trillion dollar fiasco. Now, I could talk to you about fighter aircraft, but how much do you know about fighter aircraft?
Virtually nothing.
I was a fighter pilot. I was an F-4 pilot. When I was 20 years old, I was flying the hottest fighter in the world. So if you want to know something about fighters, I'd be a good guy to talk to. The F-35 is an utter disaster. It can be tracked. As soon as they open their weapons bay, they just light up on radar. It's very short range, which means you've got to move your aircraft carrier closer to the enemy And the Russians and the Chinese and the Iranians have silkworm missiles that can sink an aircraft carrier from something like 300 or 400 kilometers away. We have it. It's not even a question of spending money on weapon systems. The weapon systems don't work, and that's what you get at end of empire. The Romans did the same thing. The British did the same thing.
Mm-hmm. So history is pretty well documented there, and it's so that it doesn't work. But somebody's making a lot of money. Somebody's making a lot of money, Bob, aren't they? Selling that defective material, those defective machines, and so forth. So, and somebody in Congress is voting for them and is allocating money, taxpayer money, and printing press money for it.
Do you know what the word shoddy means?
I think I know what it means.
Tell me.
It's defective. It's not very well put together, not very good.
Okay. During the Civil War, somebody made boots for the Union Army, and they were called shoddy boots. Uh-huh. And they're shoddy because they fell apart. And that's exactly what we're doing now. But let's talk about Wesley Clark. Right after 9/11, he was briefed and he was told the United States was going to go to war against seven countries in the next 5 years. When I read that, when I saw the interview with him, I just went, holy cow, are we going to make enemies out of everybody? And, you know, quite bluntly, we've been at constant war since 9/11, and every war that we fought, we lost. That's dumb. You walk into a bar and start a fight, and you're still fighting 18 years later. You lost. Time to walk out of the bar. Stop being such a jerk.
But we don't. We keep on fighting, and Donald Trump, when he ran for president, suggested he wanted to get away from that. He wanted to pull out of Iraq and out of, out of other places. And yet we're still there. Doesn't seem like he wanted to or had the will or what? Well, what happened?
No, here's what happened, and this is truly terrifying. He's being attacked by the military-industrial complex, by the Department of Justice, by the FBI, by the CIA, by the NSA, by CNN, because he said we need to stop fighting wars. They've been attacking him since well before the election. And this is an ongoing coup d'etat. I watch CNN on my computer, and I go, my God, I mean, how can these people be so anti-American? Now, I am not a Trump fan. I think the man's a blithering idiot. But so was George Bush. You know, we've had lots of blithering idiots. We could survive that. We cannot survive treason from within, and that's exactly what we have now. Now, all of the things in the book, there's some important things about debt and about student debt and about the medical system and about the banking system, but the most dangerous to freedom in America is the military-industrial complex, and we either turn into a total police state or we make the changes that we need to make now.
Yeah, we'll talk about those changes. I just wondered if the military is supposed to keep us safe. Ron Paul was suggesting that it was making us less safe. You might remember when Ron Paul suggested he was almost booed off the stage when he was one of the Republican candidates for president. Ron suggested that in 9/11, and he picked this up from a CIA report, somebody in the CIA reported that the reason they came over here is because we're over there.
Yeah.
And of course, that was heresy to most people, and the Republicans basically booed him off the stage. They didn't boo him off the stage, but they would have liked to have. And he said, well, you know, I sort of think maybe we should do unto others as we would have them do to us, kind of the golden rule. And they just hissed and booed. They booed him off. It was just, I remember Giuliani and the others, they just really And so, I think all those people believe that Ron was totally wrong. That just isn't true. But it seems so logical, Bob. Well, it seems so logical. If the Chinese were in the Gulf of Mexico and running bombing missions over us, I don't know if we would like that too much.
Of course. Now, here's what's interesting. Do you know what Ron Paul's military background is?
Yeah, he was a physician, I think in the Navy or the Air Force. I can't remember.
He was a flight surgeon with a fighter outfit. I met him in Arizona a few years ago. We sat down and talked for about an hour because he would have been a flight surgeon at the exact same time I was a fighter pilot. And the thing is, he was an obstetrician. Okay,
yes.
And you don't have many pregnant people in fighter squadrons. Now you do, but you didn't.
Now you might, yeah. So you would agree with that the reason they came over here, at least one of the reasons they might have come over here and bombed us on 9/11 was because we were constantly bombing people over there.
100%. I mean, here's what's crazy. You cannot do what we have been doing to the rest of the world for essentially 70 years and have people not notice. We have been at war with Muslims. Now, I'm not religious. I'm not Jewish. I'm not Catholic. I'm not Buddhist. I'm not Methodist. I'm not Muslim. But certainly I see why they believe that we're at war with the religion. And I think that's a very dangerous thing to do.
Yeah. Well, I think that's probably right, that when you start fighting wars for religion, it's the outcome usually isn't very good. Bob, in terms of the expenditures, do you have any idea what we spend for the military and how big a part of it is our budget? And are there parts of the military, perhaps, that we're not even told about, money that gets spent? Because who really keeps track of what the government's doing?
Strange. Well, the military-industrial complex does. Okay, we don't have any idea. There is so much misinformation and bad information. There are people who supposedly show that we've got $20 trillion in debt on military spending. It doesn't make any difference, okay? The United States is bankrupt, okay? We're not maybe bankrupt. We're absolutely bankrupt, and we have to do something about that. The easy and best solution is to do something about the military-industrial complex. But the very first thing that we have to do is to educate voters, to educate the citizens so they understand. I mean, I read this book. I just went, holy cow, this guy has really got an understanding of a lot of this stuff. And this is a book everybody should read. You don't have to agree with it. Everybody's put up with many years of propaganda, and there's stuff in there that I don't particularly agree with. However, it does make you think. We need to discuss this, and I cannot be more adamant. We're bankrupt. We're going to go into hyperinflation. The banks are going to close. Now, nobody in the mainstream media is going to say that. And even most of the people in the alternative media are not going to say that because they self-censor. Well, I don't want to say that because people will think I'm crazy.
Right.
Guys, you can add and subtract. You can realize that the world cannot pay $258 trillion in debt. There is not enough money in the world. Therefore, we need to do something about it. Okay?
Well, now, I think they don't understand economics well enough, Bob. So you were mentioning Kamala Harris suggesting $2,000 a month to every family or every person. I don't know. Whatever. It doesn't matter. She doesn't think about what it costs. They have, because of our situation, owning the world's reserve currency, we've been able to get away with this for a long time. And it seems as though we can just, that money does grow on trees, or that it grows from digits, right? So
yeah,
this is the education that I think, but Bob, don't you think that we're going to have an education, a very ruthless education very soon? Because as you point out, the math just doesn't work.
Soon? It's not soon, Jay. It's been going on for months and years. Yeah. In California, I think the figure it's $1,000. You can walk into a store, and if you steal something that's less than $1,000, they don't even call the cops.
Right.
Okay? The cops aren't going to come. That is Harris, and that's what she has created. If you walk down the streets of San Francisco, and San Francisco used to be the most magnificent city in the United States, you'd find nothing but drug addicts and shit on the streets. Now, that's what we've turned into. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying it's already happening.
It's already here, yeah.
You know, look at Portland. Look at Seattle. Look at BLM. Do you think things are going to get better? They're not going to get better. They're going to get worse.
Yeah.
We need to educate ourselves. We need to figure out what's going on. We need to come up with some real solutions. We need some real leaders, quite bluntly. When I look at Biden and I look at Trump and think, my God, who on earth concluded these two represent the best and the brightest in the United States? I'm sorry, they don't represent me.
All right, Bob, we're going to have to leave it go at that. And when you come back, a couple more issues besides the military-industrial complex I want to touch on, and then start to talk a little bit about what some of the solutions or what some of the changes need to be in order to put things back in order. So we'll be right back after the break, folks, so don't go away with Bob Moriarty.
Voice America is available on your Google connected device.
Okay, Google, play Turning Hard Times into Good Times podcast on iHeartRadio.
Try it today.
Great Bear Resources, trading under GBR on the TSX and GTBDF on the OTCQX, is a gold exploration company focused on their 23-kilometer flagship Dixie project in the prolific Red Lake Mining District of Ontario. Having recently made multiple high-grade gold discoveries, GBR is fully funded to complete a very active 200,000-meter drill program through to the year 2021. Stay up to date on what's been considered one of the best-performing exploration stocks in the last 2 years by visiting greatbearresources.ca.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm back here with Bob Moriarty to talk about Common Sense 2.0, a little pamphlet, a little booklet you can pick up at Amazon.com. And as Bob says, you don't have to agree with everything, but it certainly is thought-provoking. And it sure would be good if we could start talking about things that are uncomfortable. If we could do it and do it respectfully with each other, that's certainly what we try to do on this show as much as possible. Bob, when we left, we were talking about the military-industrial complex. We talked quite a bit about that. There's a lot of other things that this book touches on, too, a lot of parts of our lives that are really disruptive and very, very problematic. Debt is the big issue, and I would argue, and I think you would agree, and I think this book would agree, that 1971, August 15th, was a very, very destructive date in terms of President Nixon's taking us off the gold standard, because that really freed us up. It allowed us to create money to finance Vietnam and subsequent wars, but not only that, to finance the socialist state as well. That's why Kamala Harris thinks there's no end And you don't, as you say, nobody's talking about what any of this is going to cost. But you have some pretty strong feelings about some of these issues, and I'd like you to address them. Student debt is one you think could be fixed fairly easily. Well, it's over $1 trillion, Bob.
Well,
but of course, yeah. Our Fed just created $1 trillion. Didn't they create $2 trillion just recently? The Fed did.
Yeah. Right. Okay, here's the deal on student debt, and it's very important to understand. First of all, everybody who's going to be a responsible adult should understand that debt is slavery. When you go borrow money, you are spending your future, and whoever you owe the money to literally owns you. Now, what happened about 20 years ago was Congress decided that they were going to have these unlimited programs for loaning money to students in college. And that sounds wonderful. But they made the debt non-dischargeable, which means if you go out and borrow $50,000 or $100,000 to study underwater basket weaving, and then eventually discover you can't make a living at it, and you go bankrupt, you still owe the money. Now, what that did is gave the banks, free profit, and it gave the colleges the incentive to raise tuition. So tuition has gone up 3 times the rate of inflation, and the banks are guaranteed to make money because the debt cannot be discharged. The solution to that is so simple, it's crazy. And that is make the debt dischargeable. If the banks are going to loan money and make a profit, they should take risk. They're right. Not going to loan somebody $100,000 to study underwater basket weaving. And what we're doing is taking our best and brightest kids and we're putting chains on them. I mean, BLM is pissing and moaning about slavery. The last slave was imported into the United States in 1816, okay? Slavery was ended in the United States, in theory, in 1864, even though it's changed a lot since then. But people are going into slavery today just like they are in Tripoli, Libya. If you were in debt, $30,000 or $50,000 or $100,000 as a graduate, you're a slave. We're doing this to the best and brightest kids we've got. So instead of them starting off life with no particular debt, they're starting off with an average $32,000 apiece in debt. To pay off $32,000, you got to earn about $50,000. There are people in their 60s and 70s who are still paying off student debt.
Yeah, it's quite a racket. And it's a good example of when government gets involved with the banking institution to, I seem to remember Hillary Clinton supporting that legislation that you were talking about, but it's a good example of government getting involved with the banks, and probably the banks that help these guys get reelected, and the people aren't aware of it. So,
you think?
Yeah.
You think they just bribe Congress? Of course, they bribe Congress.
Yeah. That's what seems to be going on. There've been people complaining about it, but nothing seems to get done about that. The book also talks about derivatives as a giant casino. I mean, this is really something that people have no idea about, how this could really trigger things to the downside, right?
Unfortunately, derivatives are one of those things that very few people understand. But at the very least, you should understand that the 600 or so $1 trillion in derivatives is a giant casino. And one of the things that happens in casinos is sometimes they go broke. We have so many elements of our financial system that are in chaos right now. I'm just flat going to tell you, and you can come back in a year or two and remind me, it's going to be far worse than anybody imagines. You cannot shut down the international economy for 3 or 4 months without destroying that economy. We have 53 million Americans apply for unemployment. Many of those Americans are never going to get their jobs back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that leads to what? What's the government going to do? They're voters, right? So they're going to be voting, and they're going to be looking for... I think they have another $1.6 trillion bill or something that's between the Congress and the president right now. Nancy Pelosi and the Treasury Secretary are working on it.
They're voting right now. They're voting in Portland. They're voting in Seattle. They're voting in 400 cities in the United States. They're rioting. It's going to get worse. And there's a simple solution that would cure the mistake that Nixon made in 1971.
Yeah, it would be, but it's not going to happen, in my view, Bob, until the system breaks down, and then maybe there's a hope.
It's broken down. It's not.
Well, I realize that, but I realize that, Bob, but most people don't realize that yet. I think most people still think, are believing in the tooth fairy. So I agree with you that it's broken down, and I think we're starting to see the movement in the precious metals prices, but it's only because a relatively few number of people yet understand that and believe it and are voting on it with their pocketbooks that we haven't seen an exponential rise in the price of the metals, which I think is coming. And Alistair MacLeod, who's going to be our guest next week, has written a paper, a short one that people can actually read at J. Taylor Media. Inflation this time is different. Alistair is agreeing with you, I believe, in suggesting that the amount of money that's going to have to be printed to try to placate, to try to pacify the masses that are really angry and in trouble in many ways, is going to just debase the currency to the point where it becomes worthless, I'm afraid. Do you agree with that?
100%. And interestingly enough, bear in mind, we're in July. He says it's going to happen by the end of this year. And I wouldn't go out and predict that, but I certainly won't disagree with that. We're seeing things today that are really quite remarkable. Silver going up $1.36. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yes, it's an amazing run. And I think, 6-7% today in one day is quite something. Also the medical system, Bob, you have some ideas about that, and the book talks about that as well. We have a medical system that nobody knows what they're paying for. Nobody really understands, if you have surgery, how much it's actually costing. They seem to fool around with the numbers. I think it's something like the retail, like a Macy's might decide to put a $120 price tag on a shirt and then charge you $59. And you think you're getting quite a deal when it should have been $19 or $9 or something like that. So, what are your thoughts about the medical system and how that might be put in better order?
Well, it is totally dysfunctional. It's all fraud. They have bribed Congress. Let me give you a perfect example. I'm 73. I'm your age. I have high blood pressure, and I take medication for it. Mm-hmm. I can go to Spain and buy my blood pressure medication over the counter for 1.25 euros a month, okay? It cost me, call it $2 a month. The same pills in the United States are $105. Now, the numbers in the book are really terrifying. Medical problems are a factor in 69% of bankruptcies, okay? People have gone into the emergency room with a bad hangover. They walked out of the emergency room a few hours later with a bill for $15,000, and they've lost their home because of it. And you just raised one of the issues, and it's so simple. You need to do two things. One, every pharmaceutical company in the United States should be required by U.S. law to provide their medicines in the United States for sale at the lowest price anywhere in the world. If you want to do business in the United States, that's fine. We hope you make a lot of money. You charge the lowest price in the entire world. You cannot charge the snake bite medicine is $15,000 in Arizona, and it's $500 across the border in Mexico. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The medical system is bankrupting people. It's not a question of the quality of care. It's destroying their lives. So, one, make all medicine the lowest price in the world. Two, all medical services are priced in advance. They're written down, and you know exactly what it costs to get an appendix out, to get whatever, okay? People go into the hospital, and they don't find out until they're checking out what it costs them. That's insane. And you need to enforce the antitrust laws. The antitrust laws between the hospitals and the doctors and the medical service people and the pharmaceutical companies, it's all illegal. It's collusion. And we have the most expensive medical system in the world. And I think we're 17th or 19th or something like that. Medical system in the United States is an utter disaster. You can be against socialized medicine. They have socialized medicine in England. They have socialized medicine in Canada. They have socialized medicine in France. But they don't bankrupt people by getting them to the hospital. Now, I'm not saying single payer is the solution, but we need a solution that's better than what we've got right now. The medical system in the United States is total fraud.
Right. So it seems to be the case. So while we're on the topic of medicine, which is just a few minutes left here, what about the COVID-19 thing? I mean, we were in trouble financially before that was inflicted on us, before that was imposed. That is really, would you say that's accelerating this demise? That it was coming anyway, but that this is just really accelerated it by a year, 6 months, or whatever?
Everything we are being told about COVID-19, everything is a lie. The masks cannot possibly prevent the virus from coming to your face, period. Okay. The New England Journal of Medicine said that. CDC said that. The NIH said that. No question about it. The old mask thing, it's nonsense. The numbers are inflated for both testing and for the number of deaths. And what we've done is we've thrown this massive hand grenade in our financial system. Mm-hmm. Nobody realizes how bad it is. They're going too soon. Do you know what the difference is between inflation and hyperinflation?
It's just timing, pretty much.
Nope.
I mean, it's just all of a sudden psychology.
Nope. Okay,
go ahead.
Japan has inflation, okay? They've been inflating their currency since 1989.
Yeah.
They didn't have hyperinflation. Hyperinflation is when people lose faith in the currency. And right. Alistair McLeod, I think, is absolutely correct. And it's a lot sooner than people realize. Gold mining stocks, silver mining stocks are going to explode higher. If you think today is an anomaly, I'm going to tell you it's not. There will be days when gold's up $40, $50, $100. I own one particular stock that came up with good results yesterday. The stock was up 102% one day. That is just a start. Worldwide, 0.5% of all financial investments are in resources. In 1929, it was 29%. In 1980, it was 8%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and 1980, you and I can both relate to that, Bob, and that was quite a time, no doubt about it. And we saw I think, you know, rising inflation, lots of inflation. It is a matter of psychology. And, you know, it's when that psychology turns. If you look at charts of hyperinflation, usually you have some inflation, you know, a mild amount of inflation for quite some time, and people aren't worried about it, just like now. They're not worried about it. And then all of a sudden, when people, that psychology changes and people lose their faith in the currency, as you were saying, then all of a sudden people want to get rid of that currency and get things that are real, because they realize that tomorrow that money is going to buy less. And when that happens, when that psychology goes on, I think, and you think we're very close to there being there, right, Bob?
Yeah, so, absolutely.
All right. Well, we are basically out of time here, Bob. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts on Common Sense 2.0. Always good to hear your views on these things, and certainly want to talk to you about some of those stocks that you and I both follow. And as I know, people should go to 321 Gold. Go to 321 Gold. Bob has a lot of very interesting and profitable ideas there. It's one of those places I go to, Bob. When I look at the gold price, I go to 321 Gold every morning and look at the articles, some of which you write. But you always have a lot of excellent information there and a lot of very interesting and promising companies, some of which are sponsors to this show. Thank you so much, Bob, for being with us, and we'll look to do it again sometime in the near future. Well, that is all the time we have this week, folks. As I said, Alistair MacLeod will be with us, as will Quentin Henning, somebody that Bob Moriarty knows very well. He'll be here to talk about Novo Resources next week. Until then, goodbye, and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Benchmark Metals is a gold-silver exploration company that is embarking on its largest program to date on the Lawyers Project, with up to 50,000 meters of resource expansion and definition drilling planned in 2020. The multi-million ounce potential project is expected to have a new mineral resource estimate and PEA study completed in 2021. The company is backed by the Metals Group management team and believes this aggressive program will be complemented by one of the strongest commodity bull markets in decades. Visit BenchmarkMetals.com and subscribe to follow their success.